This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And, of course, Major League Baseball, which we've gotten two games already in, three now with the Mets finishing up, beating the Giants after losing both of the last 2 days in extra innings. We're getting that much closer to the trade deadline, and it's a hard trade deadline this year. July 31st, here to give us some baseball insight for the 2019 season and the class of 2019 Hall of Famers who will head into Cooperstown tomorrow. From the Associated Press, Ron Bloom joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. How are you, Ron?
Good. How are you?
Good. My pleasure. Did you get out of bed? Do you have to cover a game today, or you staying?
Yeah, I was at the Yankees' romp over the Rockies.
How hot was it up in the stadium?
It was like 94, maybe the hottest game of the year, but it's nothing they haven't played from time to time.
You're a tough guy. You've been down this road before, so that doesn't faze you. All I know is I was outside early, and I go, oh, I feel so badly for anyone who needs to work outside today. But the Yankees did, and they continue to cruise right along. I did a show here in New York, as a matter of fact, this morning, and got crushed by Yankee fans because I suggested the Dodgers are still the best team in baseball. Yankees a very, very close second, and they've kind of distanced themselves for everybody else. Was I keeping my Yankee hater glasses on? Are they actually the best team in baseball, or do you still think it's the Dodgers?
Well, they're a good team, whether they're the best or not, that remains to be seen. They've never really been all together on the field all season, and we'll have to see if Stanton even comes back this year, Severino, Betances. And in the end, the way baseball is now, it's a tournament in October. You play 6 months to get in, and at the end, it's how healthy you are and how your pitching holds together once the weather turns chilly.
Fielding calls from Yankee fans. They're still on the lookout for a pitcher. They want a pitcher. They believe they need another pitcher, that despite the fact that they have the best record, oh, by a half game now, since they won today already and the Dodgers haven't played, that they need another starting pitcher. We know they're having conversations with teams about it. What do you think the percentage chances the Yankees are going to add another starting arm?
Well, I think Marcus Stroman is probably the one that interests them the most. He's available for, a year and a third, so he probably cost them a little more. But I think the other interesting thing is tonight that the young kid, Devi, pitches his second game for Scranton. He's the guy who's striking out like 1.6 batters per inning. And I think if he keeps up this pace, you're going to see him up in the Bronx before not very long, in August or at the latest, the first week of September, when rosters expand, and he's going to join the bridge to the Chapmans and the Britons and the Ottavinos.
Yeah, if they do decide to call him up, if they don't put him in a package to get either a Stroman or a Betances, who, oh, by the way, Bumgarner on Friday night throws 9 one-run innings. Stroman throws 7 shutout innings against the Tigers. For any team like the Yankees or the Astros or anybody else who's looking for pitching, the price of pitching seems to be going up because those who are on the market, even a guy like Mike Leake last night went 8 perfect innings before he gave up a hit in the ninth. They're all stepping up big and performing for their team. What do you think the cost of pitching is going to be on the open market?
Well, it depends. For the guys who are just 2 months rentals, I don't think it's going to be top prospects because teams know it's like 8-9 starts, and unless, like with Verlander, when he went to Houston, you had a pretty good idea that he's doing a new deal and there's a window-type deal for a new contract, most teams aren't going to give up team of the crop. So I don't see the Yankees trading a Clint Frazier to get a pitcher for 8-9 starts. Now, if it's someone for a year and a half, then they might start to think about it.
Let me ask you about Clint Frazier. You mentioned one of the top Yankee prospects. He's, I don't know if we can call him a prospect anymore. I guess we have to, since he's toiling down away in the minors. But he's had time in the majors and has proven himself to be a major league hitter. but he's also shown deficiencies in the outfield and from time to time a wayward quote when asked about having to go back and forth between the minors and the majors. Do you think the Yankees still look at him as a future guy in their outfield for the next 10 years or a guy who is an outstanding trade piece that may entertain another team?
Well, I think more than that, they look at him as someone who better get his act together and mature at some point over the next year, year and a half, if he wants to be the type of player who sticks in the major leagues for 10 years. In the lapses in concentration, the poor outfield defense, he has to overcome that. He showed more of a work ethic this year coming back from the injury wreck 2018. But more than a wayward quote, he just has to completely grow up and realize he's a full-time baseball player who has to dedicate his life for 11 and a half months a year to playing baseball.
And we'll see if he can do that. We're talking to Ron Bloom from the Associated Press here with us on CBS Sports Radio. All right, we know who the divisional leaders are. There's a little distance between all of them. Some there's a massive distance, like with the Yankees and the Dodgers, but the wild card races to me are fascinating because there's a whole bunch of teams that are in them. The Indians, yeah. The A's, the Rays are all close. You don't count the Red Sox out. You're defending champions. So you got four playing for two spots in the American League right now. In the National League, if you're going to keep the Red Sox in the mix at three games, that means you need to keep a minimum of six teams in the mix for the wild card, including the Nationals, the Cardinals, the Phillies, the Brewers, the Diamondbacks, and the Giants. Are there going to be enough sellers out there, or are buyers going to go looking for pitching and or whatever other piece they need and find there just aren't enough teams out there willing to give something up?
Well, teams have to realize where they are, especially in the National League. And, yeah, you might be three games out, but with so many teams ahead of you, you have to put a spurt on, like San Francisco did in the last 10 days with seven in a row, just to get in consideration. Because what are the chances if you win one night that with five teams ahead of you, all five are going to lose in order for you to gain ground? So, but also some of these teams in the wild card are also in division mixes. Like Cleveland is crept up on Minnesota, and Minnesota, even for the 2 weeks before the All-Star break, was just basically treading water. So I don't think either Central Division race is over by any means with the Cardinals on the heels of the Cubs. So those two Centrals are up for play, and then that impacts the wild card, and all these teams have to look in the wild card of who they play among the contenders and make a realistic assessment. Are they in it, or is it better to punt? Now, if the Mets say they're in it, they're just fooling themselves.
I would tend to agree with you on the Mets. Let me ask you about the Twins, because you're right. They're still atop the Central Division, but that lead has shrunk considerably with the Indians picking it up. They've had a really good and pretty much, at least for me, a surprising season. Good job done by their front office rebuilding that team on the fly. How viable are they to make a huge trade or any kind of a trade? I don't want to call it huge, but a significant enough trade to fend off the Indians. How active do you think they'll be at the deadline?
Well, I think with attendance up, fans believing in the team again, a first-year manager in Rocco Baldelli, who's really sparked the players, I think they will do something because they sense they have a chance to be in it, and they have foundation for a nice little run in the next few years, and they really want to keep that fan base believing. But Cleveland, remember, like the Yankees, is a team that hasn't really been completely healthy all season, and the Indians have gotten hot since the All-Star break, despite not having all guns blazing.
Yeah, one of the names that has been kicked around pretty good leading up to the trade deadline is Trevor Bauer, one of the best arms in baseball. But the Indians are closing the gap and are a wild card team as of right now. Do you really think the Indians are going to pull the trigger and sell an arm like Trevor Bauer leading up to the 31st deadline?
I think, knowing Chris Antonetti, that they will see what's in the market, but they're not going to send him across unless they get a substantial return. And it's really hard to put those substantial return deals together. The Yankees got big return for Chapman and for Miller, because Cleveland and Chicago were seeking their first titles in decades, if not centuries, so they had hungry buyers at the other end. you don't always get that out there. And without that, it's very hard for that to fall into place, especially when you're looking at it in the middle of a weekday afternoon with a 4 o'clock deadline.
Understood and understand. The A's are the second wild card team as of right now. Billy Beane and his underlings out there in Oakland always seem to do something. They got Homer Bailey last week, even won his first game, although he looked weird to me in a green uniform, but that's just me. Has Oakland got anything else they can do to improve their life between now and the deadline?
Yeah, and I think Oakland's the team that shows you what type of deals that can be done. Homer Bailey, coming off what leading the major leagues in losses last year, he's a pitcher who you get on the cheap, and hey, he's not going to be a lot of headlines anymore at this stage of his career, most likely. But if he makes 12 starts, maybe your team can win 8 of them, where otherwise you would have won 6 of them. There are plenty of those pitchers out there. So if Zach Wheeler, sure, he is a prominent name, but if he's not going to go for a high enough price, the Mets have other players of a lesser stature who are free agent eligible at the end of the year they could sell off.
Ron, I'm working on you something. You have a Hall of Fame ballot, correct?
Yes, I do.
What was your take on all the years where a percentage of those in your electorate, guys that you voted with, decided not to vote for someone on the first ballot, either because they didn't want to see them get in on the first ballot, didn't think they deserved it, and it's so good that you knew we were getting in, but you could keep it from being unanimous? That went by the board this year when Mariano Rivera got every single vote. Were you happy to see that? Were you ecstatic to see it? Did it not matter to you? Did you not think it was important, just either you're in or you're not in? What was your read on, at least by the results, a change in the way your group decided to handle the best of the best on a guy like Mariano Rivera?
Well, I don't think it's – I mean, I'm happy to see it. I would never hold someone's either in a Hall of Fame or in the Hall of Fame or not in the Hall of Fame. I don't see first ballot as any more special than others. But if you go back historically, and I'm saying go all the way back to the old timers, they really held it against it. I mean, Joe DiMaggio was not a first ballot Hall of Famer. He had to wait till his third time to get in. But I think that attitude started changing in the 70s and 80s. And then you had some of the old-timers still intransigent. I mean, several people didn't vote for Tom Seaver, which is hard to believe, although one said he thought he voted and somehow missed the box on the ballot. But that's been changing over the years, and I think that's basically gone by the wayside. And you see now, for these overwhelming no-doubt picks, the Riveras, the Jeters, then if you had to put them on the ballot today, the Ripkins and Wins, I think there's less of a resistance to that. In a group of 450, 500 voters, do they all think monolithically? No, but in certain situations, Rivera is the best player who's ever been in that role, ever, since that role's existed for 2 or 3 decades. And I think the group, I wouldn't say came together because it's not group decisions, but 400-plus people all came to the same decision.
And I'm glad that they did. All right, last thing, your thoughts on Harold Baines and Lee Smith getting in, guys who were passed over by your group again. Again, you can speak for yourself or you can speak for the group for 10 years on one, I think 15 years on the other, because they change the amount of time that you're on the ballot, and getting in via the Veterans Committee. Is the Veterans Committee, in their way of now doing things and putting guys in, better for the Hall of Fame, lesser for the Hall of Fame? Are you annoyed by this particular election, or have you accepted it? Hey, there's two different ways you can get into the Hall of Fame now these days.
Hey, look, it's not the choice I would have made. I didn't vote for either of them, but the group put it in. There have been questions about Jerry Reinsdorf's influence on Baines, and his stats are up there. The question always becomes, where do you draw the line between very good and great? And different voters look at it in different ways. I think what's more open to a wider debate are things like the committee getting together and looking at the group that's put on the Veterans Committee, you know a Bud Seeley is going to be elected just because of who's on the panel, and you know a Marvin Miller will not be.
Again, I'm not sure that the Hall of Fame Committee, if the Veterans Committee, this is a stance they're taking. I think you guys do a much better job, and it should have been left in your hands, but that's just me. Well, I know you did a good job with me here today, Ron. I appreciate your insight. Thanks much.
All right, have a good evening, and we'll speak soon.
Good luck at the ballpark again tomorrow. Stay cool. If he's heading back to the stadium to watch the Yankees again, I feel badly for any of my brethren who had to go out and actually cover a game today. I love the fact that I got to watch baseball all day on television here in the air-conditioned climes of CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.